I was rather perturbed that the vampire resisted being abducted. It wasn't as if I intended to kill the Bloodkin after all. Besides, higher vampires were known to be very hardy species. If it survived conscious vivisection, and it would, probably, I had every intention of eventually setting the thing loose. Preferably, I'd do so somewhere far, far away from my tower. Then I wouldn't have to hear Luther, the local coven leader, blathering on about how it was unethical to perform experiments on sentient beings. Nor would I have to deal with the Vampiri Council, who tended to get very cross when rogue wizards waylaid their couriers. Perhaps I should kill it, after all. I gave an involuntary shake of my head, as if the physical act were proof that I disagreed with my fae-trained instincts. Logically speaking, I did disagree, as killing the vampire might create more problems than it would solve. Yet, my deepest intuitions informed me that ending the vampire by burning him to ash and scattering his remains to the winds was definitely the safest course. Due to my unnatural inclination toward evil, of late I often question the motives behind even my most mundane decisions. I was perfectly content with my own moral ambiguity until I came into contact with my own kind. Then I fell in love, and suddenly found myself wanting to reclaim that part of my humanity the Fae had erased through years of conditioning and torture. To be honest, I didn't know if it was the Fae brainwashing that engendered such dark proclivities, or my shade. It was easier to blame it on the Fae, but having a shadow wraith grafted onto one's soul did tend to make an individual a bit peckish for the occasional foray into incivility and violence. One could take their pick, as the two made up what was by far the darker side of my conscience. But there would be time later for droll introspection. At present, I had a higher vampire to capture. Although it wasn't a local coven member, a missing courier would bring Vampiri troubleshooters to town. That would cause friction with both the local coven and Queen Maeve. Of course, whomever the council sent would have no idea that I was at fault, but Luther and Maeve would suspect me immediately. No, it would be catch and release today. Once I mind-wiped the vampire, no one would be able to connect me to the abduction. And if I needed more organs for my experiments, I could always track down a revenant or a ghoul. The yield would be of much lower quality, but such was the price of being a changeling prince in exile. Satisfied with my decision, I swept the dark, dusty warehouse with my gaze, simultaneously forcing the shade within to enhance my eyesight. The creature offered only slight resistance to my command, undoubtedly distracted by the prospect of feeding on the vampire's essence. I had no intention of allowing my shade to gorge itself on a vampire's energy, as the wraith would be unruly for days after. But for now, I'd let the spirit draw its own conclusions about this hunt, and deal with its disappointment later. A subtle shift of shadow in the rafters above informed me where my prey currently hid. The shade didn't allow me to see in the dark in the same manner as the night vision spell, but it was just as effective. When it loaned me its sight, my eyes picked up both thermal and magical radiation in the infrared spectrum. The effect was similar to a negative exposure image, and it made it much easier to spot things that were hidden from normal eyesight. Obviously, the vampire was intent on an ambush. It wasn't the most clever or original approach, but it made sense for one with this monster's talents. Many mature, higher vampires possessed one or two tricks, minor magics that made it easier to hunt human prey. Common examples included the ability to glamour weaker beings, to turn into mist, to shift into an animal form, and the like. Master vampires possessed even greater abilities, such as Luther's teleportation talent, a skill that had likely been passed down from his maker. Such gifts only developed as vampires grew older, and not every vampire inherited their maker's skills. Moreover, each subsequent generation weakened the bloodline, making it less likely that such skills would emerge. A first-generation vampire, one who had been made by a master, was almost guaranteed to display some gift of magic once they matured. However, a third- or fourth-generation vampire rarely possessed any skills beyond the superhuman speed, reflexes, and strength that all their kind possessed. But this vampire, this creature was something special. It had a bit of shadow magic, limited but similar to my own, which was why I didn't spot it instantly in the dark. The vampire could cloak itself in shadow, a talent I'd never known a vampire to possess. That made it unique among its kind, and quite useful to me from a magical research perspective. That's why I needed to capture this particular vampire. It obviously came from a very strong bloodline, and based on the talents the vampire displayed, it was a first-generation bloodkin. The opportunity to acquire such a specimen would likely not come along again for quite some time. Knowing what was at stake, my pulse quickened as I walked beneath the vampire's hiding spot. No sooner had I exposed myself than the vampire dropped silently from its perch. As the shadowy figure fell, I waited until the last millisecond to act. As a human, I didn't possess the enhanced reflexes and speed of even a newly made vampire. But when I allowed my shade to act of its own accord, it did.